Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Roost Podcast. As always, I am Carter Spires here with my co-host Matthew Bartlett, the owner and managing editor of AtTheRoost.com, your premier source for Rice sports news. Well, the good news is that moral victory season is finally over. The bad slash good news is that Rice ended it with another moral victory. I mean, they held one of the most explosive offenses in the country. I believe a team that was actually leading the nation in scoring through two games coming into this one to 0 second half points. So, you know, we'll get into that and there'll be some positives
to
take out of it.
Cash in two moral victories for one real victory. What's the exchange there?
Yeah, I don't know. That would be nice, wouldn't it? But yeah, we'll hit some housekeeping stuff as usual, including a really huge commitment for Rice on the recruiting front, and, you know, do some CUSA scores like we usually do. And then we'll get into Baylor and then preview Louisiana Tech.
Yeah, we got a lot of things going on. I guess we'll go through a couple of those housekeeping notes first. Thank you all to those who have followed and subscribed, downloaded, et cetera, on the podcast. I want to give a shout out to TFW for giving us a 5-star review. He said, "This is the best place to get up-to-date information on all Rice University athletics. Thank you for bringing insight and information to all Owl fans." I can't promise I'm going to read all the 5-star reviews on the podcast, but I like what I'm hearing. So,
you know, your chances of having your review read on the podcast certainly go up a lot if you leave us a 5-star review.
And if you write it. If it's there, I mean, so far, so good. We've climbed, by the way, Carter. We were, I think, at 4.8. We're now at a 4.9 on iTunes. So I don't know how many more 5-star reviews before we get rounded back to a 5. I'm sure there's some Rice folks in the crowd that can do the math, right?
Yeah. Shouldn't be too difficult.
There you go. Right in. Tell us how many more we need. And then we can go ahead and jump into the commitment news. So Rice picked up a commitment, I guess he officially announced it like 11:50 last night after most folks are Saturday night, after most folks were fast asleep. But Jalen Reeves is a defensive end out of Fort Lauderdale, Florida. He actually visited and was on campus for the first time this past weekend and had already told the Rice staff that he was all in and wanted to commit and completely bought into everything that they were telling him. And they had to persuade him to check out campus first. So it's a pretty good sign when he hasn't even seen the facilities or the Patterson Center or any of that, and he is already bought in. So he was there, watched the game, and had no questions about it. Said this was absolutely the right place for him. Loved the culture, loved all the people. It was just a slam dunk decision. And on the field, he's going to be exciting. So I wrote a little quick update about him. Somebody on staff described him to me as Anthony Ekpe 2.0, which is not a bad comparison, as Ekpe led the team in sacks last year and has been wrecking havoc all year this year. So he's going to be a big piece. And then perhaps more impressive is, I think, the list of programs that had given him offers that he turned down and ended up picking Rice. I got a couple of those in front of me here. Let's see. We had Syracuse, which is pretty good. We had Army, Boston College, LSU. One of those is not like the others.
Yeah. Got Pitt on there too. Pitt with an exciting victory over UCF yesterday.
So pretty cool. This guy is a difference maker, and it's pretty encouraging to see that in Bloomgren's first class, we were beating out service academies for kids, and the second class, we were beating out some other good group of five programs, other CUSA squads, and now there are handful of guys already committed that had Power 5 offers and turned them down to come play ball at Rice. And so Reeves is the latest one of those, and he is going to be disruptive.
Yeah, for sure. We will definitely look forward to getting him on campus. He's currently listed as a 2-star on 247 Sports. It would not surprise me if he got that same that same bump that the other Rice commits have gotten and get them back to that stage where they're at all three stars in the class. And with an offer list like that, I don't think wouldn't be too surprising to see that happen.
Yeah, so I've actually been keeping track of that. So far, I think about half of the guys that Rice has offered didn't have any rating on 247 before that. And let me count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 of Rice's current commits out of 13. 13, well, now 14.
Now 14, yeah.
Not counting Reeves, but 9 of the previous 13 bumped up to a 3-star after they were committed to Rice. So clearly Rice is doing something right with the evaluation process, and the recruiting services are trying to play catch up. So would not be surprised if the same thing happens with Reeves. He is a very, very, very good get.
All right. That moves us on to the rest of CUSA. So we're just about finishing up non-conference play, and sadly it doesn't look like we maybe have one more big chance at an upset next week, I think. But the last good chance we had was Old Dominion yesterday actually led Virginia 17-7, you know, ranked Virginia 17-7 at the half, but ended up losing 28-17.
And that's the same squad that, of course, knocked off Virginia Tech last year.
And that also got knocked off by one, you know, a team from Houston. I can't remember which one at the end of the season last year.
Well, unfortunately or fortunately, we don't get to see that matchup for a very, very long time because of how the divisional breakups go. So there was that one piece. And then another one I want to call out was North Texas and UTSA. So several CUSA squads have already started a couple games of conference play. And North Texas beat UTSA 45-3. And UTSA quarterback Frank Harris got knocked out with a shoulder injury during that game. And Lowell Narcisse, former backup from LSU, came in and did not do very well. So folks in San Antonio this morning are obviously pretty ruffled, and that things have not started out very, very well over there. So that's a Rice will get both of those teams later in the schedule, and it's looking like one of those will be a easier game than the other.
Yeah, for sure. North Texas and Mason Fine, you know, came this close to upsetting what looks like it's going to be a pretty good Cal team. I believe that was last week. So I think you definitely have to look at them. If they were not in the preseason, you definitely have to look at them as the CUSA West favorites right now. They are they're going to be a problem.
Yeah. Well, what is wild about this game is Fine only had 195 passing yards and 2 touchdowns, and North Texas still had 45 points.
Yeah. That was, when is that game? October?
I think so. Well, we don't have much left of September.
Yeah. Rice at least gets them at home, I think. So, you know,
yep. we'll
cross that bridge when we come to it, I guess. And then the last score of note, I think, is Rice's upcoming opponent, which Louisiana Tech looked pretty good on offense against FIU, but gave up 31 points to an FIU squad that has not exactly been impressing this year, I would say.
No, it's been tough sledding. We mentioned North Texas was looking good to contend in the West. FIU, I was one of the teams I was projecting to finish at the top of the East, and they are 1-3 and barely beat New Hampshire. So yeah. I don't know how much that that victory for Louisiana Tech is going to should concern or not concern. But it's definitely an interesting data point. And again, things not so great in Miami right now. It's and, you know, we talk about this and we hit on this last week. There's a lot of CUSA squads that are entering the last week of September, beginning of October, who have already won a game and have season outlooks that look a lot more pessimistic than how we're feeling about the Owls right now. And I'm going to take that as a good sign.
Yeah, for sure. It just goes to show how much you're how much your schedule can, I guess, warp expectations relative to the actual game results you put up against those schedules, particularly in the non-conference play.
Speaking of non-conference play.
Yeah. So Baylor, like I said, we're glad to be done with moral victory season, I guess. This was another one, certainly, you know, definitely you would like to see more out of the offense in this one. But the defense just, I don't know. You know, I don't know that there's a whole lot we can say that hasn't already been said. The front seven in particular are just so disruptive and so impressive what they've done. They put up another five tackles for loss yesterday. They had six quarterback hurries and two sacks. Just a really impressive effort from these guys against a Power Five program that, you know, like I said at the beginning of the show, I think was leading the nation in points per game against, you know, that UTSA squad. I think that we've discussed a little bit how things are going for them, and then an FCS program in Stephen F. Austin. But still, you know, 60 points a game is 60 points a game. And Rice came in and shut them out in the second half.
Yeah, four team averaging, what does that make, like almost four touchdowns a half? And yeah, they scored zero touchdowns in the second half. Like, I don't think I need to say anything more than that.
The run game continues to sort of not be what we want it to be. I mean, I don't know how many. Baylor had three sacks, and if you pull those out of the rushing, you know, Tom Stewart's final line was four carries for 5 yards with a long of 21 yards. So that means those other three carries were a solid negative 16. So, you know, if you factor that in and subtract the carries and add those yards back in, it's not quite as bad, but you're still looking at, what, 32 carries for 80 yards, which is not going to get it done. And then the longest carry from a running back was an 11-yarder by Aston Walter. The hope going forward, I think, is that when Rice faces teams in conference play, that they match up with better in the trenches, that will continue to improve. I mean, you just look at the Army game that, you know, the guys on that defensive line and then in that front are probably more physically comparable to the teams they're going to play in conference play than teams like Baylor and Wake Forest and Texas have been. But it's definitely an area to look for going forward. You know, what kind of push Rice is getting up front against teams in conference play.
I think so. And then there's a couple things I wanted to point out. I think I pulled out and I looked. It was a couple minutes before halftime, and Rice was averaging 1.1 yards per carry in the first half. So that was not great. And they were able to finish, you know, closer to four, which I think you mentioned, you know, getting to CUSA opponents instead of Power Five opponents will help. So there's that piece. And then, so it was a little bit difficult with, we had some rain this week in Houston to get out to practice.
Just a little bit.
Right. Get everything, all the injury updates pulled together. So we had a couple guys that wasn't thinking we were going to be missing, but ended up being late scratches. I guess game time decisions, really. So Justin Gooseberry, Clay Servin, and Reagan Williams, you could arguably say the three most impactful blockers Rice has on offense, did not play. So losing both of your tackles and your fullback that is terrifying when he's running at you is not a good thing. There's that piece that hopefully this is just a 1 week thing and we'll have them full strength for Louisiana Tech. Then there's another component that I thought was really interesting, because after the game, I was talking to Wiley Green and I said, so tell me, it feels like during the first half of games, the offense is just, I don't know if it's not in sync or not locked in. What's going on? Because by the time y'all get to the second half, the ball starts moving. And he kind of explained to me, he said, well, you know, we're watching all this film on how we think these defenses are going to line up against us. But all the film we're watching is against, for the most part, spread teams. So Rice doesn't really have any film to look at of Baylor lining up to stop someone who is going to bring in, you know, a jumbo package on third and one. And the first half is really, in first quarter, second quarter, Wiley said, was really adjustment time, where the coaches are saying, all right, here's what we thought they were going to throw at us. Here's what they did throw us. Here's what we change. And by halftime, the coaches have gone in and made those adjustments, and Rice is able to start moving the football. So I was like, I think that's interesting. Obviously, we need those adjustments to come quicker. And now that we're going to play familiar opponents who Rice played last year in conference play, hopefully we will have to do less guessing in the film preparation part and we'll be more prepared at the beginning of the game. But I thought that was worth noting, that Rice's own offense and tendencies as challenging as they are for other defenses, they're equally challenging to kind of scheme and project how an opponent is going to play them.
Yeah, that's an interesting, I never would have thought about that, but yeah, you don't, one consequence of having an offense that nobody else runs is that you don't necessarily know how teams are going to defend against it. And I guess, you know, that speaks, you know, like you said, you'd like those adjustments to sort of come earlier and come faster, but I think it does speak well to the in-game acumen of this coaching staff, which I think is not something that every even good college staff is always great at, because it's, you know, it's hard to adjust to stuff on the fly as opposed to game planning during the week when you've got a whole lot more time and you're not reacting on the spot. But the fact that particularly over the last two games, Rice has generally gotten better, particularly on offense in the second half, you know, I think at least suggests that they are probably doing a better job of making those adjustments than their opponents are. And we'll see if that continues to pay off going into conference play.
Yeah, and I didn't keep like track of half to half, but I feel like there was just so many drops by wide receivers in the first half. Mm-hmm. There were a couple scattered in the second half, but there was at one point where Rice converted in the second half three straight third downs, and a couple of them through the air, and Wiley was moving the ball well, and the offense looked as in sync as we've seen it. So there was that piece too, just the receivers getting open, and when they did get open, catching the football, which is, you know, football 101, and we shouldn't have to be practicing this late into the season.
Yeah, I mean, overall they were 8 of 18 on third down, which is just under 50%, which is a really good conversion rate.
Yeah, so I just looked, and you don't have this number in front of you, Carter, but in Rice's, what are we at? 13 plus 4, 17 games under Mike Bloomgren. Where do you think that ranks, 44% converting, as far as their best games so far?
I would bet it's near the top. If not first, then maybe second.
It is second. They converted 50% against Houston last year, 44% against Baylor. And that was with an offense that only scored 13 points and was catching a lot of flack, particularly in the first half, for not being efficient. It's a launching point.
To be able to do that, like you said, with your two starting tackles both out and you're missing your fullback as well, which not something that would impact a lot of teams, but it does in fact impact Rice. So yeah, to be able to, you know, to convert those third downs, and for the, like you said, we don't have the breakdown by half, but I would bet that most of those were in the second half when they were, you know, when they were trying to pull closer. So again, not the overall performance you want on offense, but a couple positives to take out, especially as they hopefully get healthy moving into conference play. The other interesting thing to watch going forward is the quarterbacks. We now seem to maybe have a bit of a quarterback controversy on our hands.
Was hoping that we wouldn't be here by the time conference play started, but here we are. So, which one do you want to tackle first, Wiley or Tom?
Let's go with Wiley, I guess. I don't know. I feel like that it's sort of interconnected, you know. And you know, the I guess the good thing here is that, like, Wiley's action has been cut short this season, and he didn't look great against Army, but, you know, in the limited time against Wake Forest, and he had some pretty nice moments in this game. This is not necessarily a game where, or a situation where the guy you thought was going to be the starter coming in just hasn't played well. And so you're kind of having to work in the backup to see if you can get something going. I think a big part of the reason that Tom is involved here, obviously, besides Wiley's injury, is that he's played pretty well when they've gotten him in. Like, he gives something to this offense. He throws a pretty good deep ball, which is giving them something that they need. So, you know, there are worse kind of quarterback controversies to be in, I guess.
This is true.
And it was a weird situation because in the first half, it definitely seemed like the offense as a whole worked a little better when Tom was in, but I don't know that I would necessarily say that he, like, on his own was playing better than Wiley did in the first half. Like, I don't know. Yeah, it just seemed like the offense as a whole was kind of out of sync the whole first half. And they were collectively a little bit better on the drives where they had Tom in.
Yeah, so going into the game, the plan was Wiley gets the first two series, then Tom gets the third series, and then we'll open it back. We'll open it up and we'll go from there. And so Wiley's first run through the offense had two third downs, third and 10 and third and 14 because of running games that did not set him up for well. And neither of those were converted. Then Tom Stewart comes in. He converts third and 4 on the ground, a third and 7, and a third and 5. And what stuck out for me, those last two third downs, he threw a 14-yard pass to get third and 7 and a 17-yard pass to convert third and 5, setting up that field goal that put Rice on the board. And so at that point, you know, Wiley was okay in very limited work, but Tom converting those two third downs through the air on big-time passes kind of put him ahead and at least was enough to let him finish out the first half. So I don't really think that was a scripted decision. I think that was
right. Yeah.
Stewart's moving the ball, keep him in. Then Wiley came in for the second half and then he moved the ball and he converted some third downs with his legs actually. And there was at one point where he took off and dove for the line of scrimmage head first after being knocked out of a game with a neck injury 2 weeks ago. And I was screaming in my head. I'm like, Wiley, no. Which, I mean, from his perspective, he knows he needs to play well. Otherwise, the guy who was his backup when he went down and is playing well could take his job. So I understand that perspective. But I would rather not have Wiley hurt again before conference play starts. And then, of course, Wiley, at the end of the game, he got the offense moving and things seemed to go pretty well until he got hit and came out of the game. And I think this was Stewart came in and Tom Stewart and plays immediately following Wiley Green leaving the game with some sort of injury.
Well, Rice is 2 for 2 on touchdowns.
And he scored both of them with his legs. So that has got to be that 21-yard run from him with Bradley Rosner just doing an incredible job blocking 20 yards downfield. Mm-hmm. That's got to be the weirdest stat of the season so far for Rice. And it's been an interesting one.
Yeah. And a quick aside, speaking of Brad, another, he had some drops at times, but, you know, 7 receptions for 100 yards getting, you know, now accounting for both of Rice's 100-yard receiving games this year.
And Rice nothing didn't to have sneeze at. Anybody have multiple 100-yard receiving games last year, if my memory serves me correct.
Yeah, I don't think so. So,
and then one quick note on him. Throughout the spring and going into the fall, my big question was him. I'm like, yeah, he's big, but he's not an Aaron Cephas type body. He doesn't look like, you know, a power forward who's going to muscle you out of the way. He's kind of
like, yeah, he's pretty lanky, yeah,
and thin. And so my question for him was like, I know you have the height, but can you muscle guys out and win the football? And I think against Baylor with some strong athletic defensive backs, I was impressed about his ability to go up. And I know he wasn't able to pull in either of those fades into the end zone in the second half. So that was, you know, a bit frustrating, but I think we could have had some better ball placement on those. But his ability to fight in space for the football and be physical, I was really impressed with him. And I think Rice has found no one's going to supplant Austin Trammell as the go-to guy, but as teams try and take him out of the picture, Rice now has, I feel, an option that they can trust to go up and make a big play that isn't Austin Trammell. And that's huge entering conference play.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, particularly on that second fade, you know, you would have liked to see him come down with that one because that was the one I think he kind of got his hands on. But, you know, like you were saying, that was a hands issue rather than like a body issue. You know, he did exactly what you want from like a big wide receiver on that play. Is he just he got in front of the defensive backs and just totally boxed him out and left the defensive back with absolutely no chance to make that play, which from a like sort of a process perspective, in terms of how you play that as that kind of wide receiver, he did it exactly right. And so I completely agree that that's a really encouraging sign for him, that as a guy who was maybe a little bit leaner and you wouldn't necessarily be expect to be kind of the strongest guy with that frame, that was a really good sign for him that he is showing the capability to really use his body effectively and become, you know, the kind of red zone threat that they need him to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm pulling up and looking at my notes from last year, and it looks like Austin Walter actually had two 100-yard receiving games last year. I don't know how I could have forgotten about him. I guess he just had the football so many times I didn't know if he was on the ground or through the air.
Yeah.
So he had a 101-yard game and a 104-yard game, and then Austin Trammell had 112 against UTEP. So Rice had three in total. Well, yeah, three in total 100-yard receiving games last year, split between two players, and Brad Rosner has two, and we haven't even gotten to conference play.
Yeah, so didn't have a wide receiver post two 100-yard receiving games last year. So
I guess it technically matters at what point do you consider Austin a wide receiver,
right,
or
yeah,
a running back or a whatever he ended up jack of all trades, something. Someone who Rice has not quite figured out how to replace yet.
Yeah. So to get back to the quarterbacks, honestly, I don't know that I have, you know, a million thoughts to share on this or to just go into infinite detail on. I feel like Rice has the capability, if they're just more consistent collectively, you know, when they get guys back on the offensive line to get the protection a little better, and, you know, you cut down on the drops from the receivers and the quarterback and the receivers are in sync. I feel like Rice has the ability to play winning football with both of these guys. And I feel like both of them have shown in spots that they can be effective at keeping Rice ahead of the chains and getting drives down the field when everything else is kind of working. So at this point, I'm not going to, you know, stump hard for one guy or the other. I just, you know, you hope one guy can kind of seize it in practice this week and they can go with that guy against Louisiana Tech. And, you know, you don't have to, you're not splitting, because I don't think you want to be in a situation where you're scripting series at the start of the game for one guy or the other in conference play. So, you know, we'll see. Hopefully one guy plays great in practice and seizes the job and continues to play well in games. But whoever it is, as you know, as long as he earns the job and that's the guy that the staff decides they feel the most comfortable with, I don't have a dog in the fight in terms of that there's one guy that I really feel like Rice can play a whole lot better with at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And I think the most important note for both quarterbacks so far is that every team in Conference USA through four games has thrown at least two interceptions. Rice has thrown zero, and I'm trying to think. I can't really think of any passes by either guy that should have absolutely been picks and were dropped or something like that. Like, they've both protected the football really, really well. Wiley's had a fumble, but you can live with a turnover every four games from your quarterback. And I think, you know, Wiley probably still has the upper hand by a little bit, and I would expect he will probably start again against Louisiana Tech just to keep things as they were. And, you know, Blomgren is pretty good and had said before the game that Wiley's not getting Wally pipped, that he's not going to get injured and lose his job. So I think there's going to be at least, you know, after seeing this, I think we're going to see probably two quarterbacks play against Louisiana Tech, if I had to guess.
Mm-hmm.
And see what the decision goes from that onward. But I agree. Like, I think they're both capable, good options. I don't know if either of them has really shown me that they are great and can take the offense on their back and start really converting red zone opportunities and going from one or two touchdowns a game to three or four. that's going to be the big test. And one of these guys can do that, then they're not losing the job. So we'll see. Not, you don't want to have two quarterbacks, but you'd rather have two quarterbacks than zero quarterbacks. And I'm confident right now that Rice has at least two capable quarterbacks and is going to have to try and figure out how to make a decision and run the offense from this point. So not ideal, but certainly they could be in a lot more perilous situation.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of putting it, is that sometimes a quarterback competition means you have no quarterbacks, and sometimes it means you have more than one. And even though neither guy has looked stellar so far, like they're going to lead Rice to a win all on their own, they have shown enough that you feel like this is a situation where they have two quarterbacks rather than none. You talked about red zone opportunities, and hey, great news in the kicking game. Rice hit its first two field goals of the season. The one extra point was hit. I'm not going to ding Chris Barnes too hard for coming in, you know, being a punter and not having kicked a place kick in a game so far this year, and being asked to kick a, I think it was a 44 yarder. So
yeah, or in his career, his first collegiate field goal attempt was from 44 yards against Baylor.
Yeah. So, that's positive developments. And when you pair that with the fact that Zach Hoban is healthy enough to do the kickoffs, you know, that kind of trends toward his return in.
So what's the adage if you have, so they say if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. If you have three kickers, what do you have?
whoa, four kickers. Let's not forget about Antonio Montero here.
This is true, the only perfect Rice kicker on the season.
Yes.
Yeah, so I don't know if that makes it any clearer or not.
I don't think at any point this season, unless Hoban turns out to be just incredible when he eventually gets into that competition, I don't think we're ever going to feel like Chris Boswell has returned in the kicking game for Rice this year. But if you can hit the chip shot field goals and hit all the extra points like Harrison did on Saturday, that takes a lot of anxiety away. And, you know, it may take a couple more games of that kind of performance to totally make that anxiety go away. And first of all, preferably you'd rather some of those chip shot field goals turn into touchdowns. But I think you feel a lot better about the kicking coming out of this game than you had at any point previously for Rice during the season.
Yes, you're not over the moon, but like you said, you should make every field goal within 30 yards. You don't want to be kicking those, but if you're going to kick them, you need to make them, and Rice made them. So at that point, the bare minimum threshold of what we need to see from the kicking game was passed. So that's a win.
Yeah. And then moving over to the defense, like I said at the beginning of the show, you just running out of superlatives for the front seven. Even with Trey Schumann, a late scratch, and with a late scratch coming into the game, they were continued to be just so disruptive. And it was really, really impressive that they got contributions from basically every guy in the front seven in terms of you know, making either it was a bunch of tackles or some TFLs or some pressures or the two sacks they got. Was it two sacks or was it just the one? ESPN has it listed that they had
just the one.
Yeah.
But they were in the backup. I think they registered six hurries.
Yeah.
Five tackles for a loss, one official sack. I think there was one where Brewer kind of, the play broke down and he scrambled for a loss. I think that was ruled a loss and not a sack.
Yeah. And then was it Antonio Montero that came in on the play? Am I thinking of this right? Was it where
Antonio Montero came in? I think he was the one that was either in the area of that forced fumble on fourth down. I don't know. He had a heck of a game. I'm losing track of how many plays him and Blaze Aldridge. We've talked about them being difference makers all season. They were unreal. I mean, the front four was really, really strong, but Baylor wasn't able to get anything going on the ground whatsoever. I mean, really in both halves. I think, what do they end up averaging? Brewer had a couple runs, but Baylor got 3.5 yards per carry. You take out a couple runs by Brewer and it's 3 yards a carry from everybody else.
Yeah, Brewer had 12 carries for 58 yards. from all the other guys that got a rush combined, it was what, 8, 15, 22 carries for 49, 58, 63, 68. So what did I say? 22 carries for 68 yards.
Yeah.
That'll get it done. That'll get it done.
Yeah.
So, and then the secondary. Yeah, for sure. With the secondary, Naeem Smith, I think, continues to show why he has forced his way into playing time. I thought he was really, really effective. A mixed bag on the back end. You know, they got beat one time deep. That was, I think, Andrew Byrd got beat on a double move. Obviously, again, you don't want to see that.
I couldn't really tell because the receiver was cutting across and there was no safety help in the middle. So either Byrd got beat or there was no support after the fact. So there was a breakdown for sure. I don't know if it's fully on Byrd or not, but
yeah, I haven't rewatched the game and I don't know if there was an angle on the broadcast where you could see exactly what happened, but obviously you would like that cleaned up, but you know what, Brewer threw the ball.
We can talk about that one play and we can debate who was at fault for one play.
Yeah.
At this point last year we couldn't count the plays.
And so on the whole, if that's the extent of your sort of really negative plays in the secondary, you know, given the way things have gone for Rice over the season plus of the Blomgren era, that is a performance you will take from the secondary. You would obviously like it to be better and to not give up any of those plays at all. But
and then there was one more big play that I wanted to point out because I thought this was pretty telling of just a snapshot on where this defense is. So Brewer hit Tyquan Thornton for a 44-yarder to get them down. I think it was like right at the 33-yard line in the third quarter. And at that point, he was kind of pulled down and you had a sigh of relief of, ooh, they didn't score. And then Rice went back and got the ball back. And they snuffed out, I think it was meant to be a wide receiver, like reverse pass throwback to Brewer. But he was covered and the receiver threw it away. And so that was the very next play. So Rice was still disciplined after giving up that big play. And then right after that, they forced a fumble and got the ball back. So not only, you know, big plays, every defense in Conference USA and in the country is going to give up a couple big plays. How do you respond and what do you do with it? Rice going back and being set for the trick play, which was kind of almost desperation to try and move the football because Baylor really hadn't done much of that in the second half. And then Rice staying home and turning the ball over and getting the ball back after that. I thought that sequence was huge and kind of indicative of where this defense is about being able to bow their neck and fight back, which we didn't really see last year. And now we've seen several instances throughout this season where they're willing and able to stay and fight and work to get those big plays. One of three fumbles that Rice forced against Baylor.
Yeah, and I think that kind of leads me naturally into the real takeaway that I have for this game is, what I'll say it again, hopefully we're done with the moral victories and this is all we have to, we can go forward talking about how Rice won the game and how exciting that is. But my number one worry for this team through these four games of non-conference play, this absolutely brutal schedule that they have played, was even if there were moments of improvement, even if there were positive signs, what was the team's mindset going to be like? Because it's not easy, even with all we've said about, you know, how good they've looked on defense and how much improved they are from last year. Like, it sucks to start the season with four straight losses, three of them at home, and to, you know, have lost two of those by fairly large margins. Like, it's not easy to stay positive and stay strong and stay tough after going through that. And so there was a part of me that was pretty worried because, you know, not that I have any doubts about the sort of mental strength of this team, but like, it would be so easy to for them to be really down on themselves and be really frustrated. And I mean, I'm sure they are frustrated, but to be really upset at this point in the season that the results haven't turned out or that the schedule has been so tough, they haven't had a chance to put one in the win column, even though they played so well. And so I thought this game, as you know, the coda to non-conference play, as much as you wanted it to end in a victory, especially the way things were going at the end, you know, for them to be down 21-3 at the half and come back and shut down Baylor in the second half and allow no points and to get within, make it a one score game in the fourth quarter. I think it says so much about the kind of mental makeup of this team and the toughness and the persistence mm-hmm. that they've shown this season. So I was really impressed with that. And hopefully that, you know, when they'll come out in the coming weeks playing against these teams that they're on more equal talent footing with, and, you know, where these games mean something for them in conference play, I think that bodes really well for the, you know, when we get to a, you know, it's a one score game in the fourth quarter of a conference game. I think we have every reason to expect that they will handle the pressure incredibly well because they've shown so much perseverance and toughness through these first four games.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, I couldn't help but think back to at the end of the second quarter, Rice had the ball, couldn't pick up a first down, punted, and Baylor went down and scored on three plays in less than 30 seconds to take a 21-3 lead instead of a 14-3 lead at that point. And, you know, hypothetically, you can't play too many what ifs, but if that drive doesn't result in points, then there's a scenario where Rice is scoring that touchdown from Stewart in the second half and going for two and is in a tie game with Baylor in the fourth quarter. And there's like scenarios like that in the Army game too. And there's a world that is not crazy land where Rice is 2-2 with wins over Army and Baylor entering week five. It's not a stretch of imagination for that to have been a reality. Rice was that close in two of these games. And the same team that is 0-4 that could have been 2-2 is going to play Louisiana Tech next weekend. And I guarantee you that they are really, really ticked in the locker room that they have an 0-4 record playing for the most part as well as they have with those mistakes here and there. So I'm pretty confident that this team is already a lot better than maybe even we're giving them credit for. They have some offensive woes, and yeah, we've talked through that, but going into conference play, you know, they have every goal on their, they made a preseason covenant of how they were going to work and what they were going to do, you know, with the players and the team. And they told us on Saturday that every goal they have on that covenant is still in place. Like, they want to go win conference play. They want to go take care of the ball at Rice Stadium and win games. And I think this team can still do that. And, you know, if anything, the 0-4 record is leading teams to undervalue how much progress they've made compared to where they would have been. You know, if this team is 2-2, people are talking about, is Rice one of the better teams in Conference USA? And all that takes is what, two or three, four different bounces? That's pretty wild.
Yeah, for sure. All right. I think that leads us pretty naturally to Louisiana Tech, unless you have any last thoughts on Baylor.
Nope. Let us close the book on non-conference play.
Yeah. Thankfully, that is over now. All right. Well, Louisiana Tech comes to Rice Stadium next week, another home game. So they, you know, they're 3-1 and with an entirely excusable and understandable loss to Texas. I think that was 45-17 in the first week of the season. They followed up with three straight wins against, I believe it's Grambling, Bowling Green, and now FIU last week or on yesterday. This past week, FIU, like we said at the beginning of the show. They did pretty well against Bowling Green. I think that one was, what, like 35-7? Yeah.
They didn't have much struggle with those non-conference games.
Yeah. Although...
Well, sans Texas.
Yeah. They were not stellar against Grambling. Only 20-14 there, and I think they were actually up 20-0 at halftime and then couldn't score in the second half. Looked pretty good on offense against Florida, against FIU, but not great on defense. So kind of an interesting season for them so far. Like, I think the record is exactly what they probably expected it would be, but the way they've played in those games, aside from maybe the Bowling Green win, has been kind of scratchy at times, especially on defense.
Yeah, and the thing about Louisiana Tech that made them so difficult to really pin down before the season is they're a very erratic team. They can go out and have games where everything is clicking, and then they go out and just lay eggs and just don't show up. And, you know, we've seen that under Skip Holtz for a couple years now mm-hmm. with Louisiana Tech. So Jamar Smith, you know, their quarterback, a lot of the offense is going to live and die on how efficient he can be. And, you know, he has probably been middle of the pack as far as, you know, consistency goes in his time at Louisiana Tech, has had some interception troubles. So, you know, it's kind of hard to get a read. Like you said, they were okay, not great in non-conference play. And as well as they looked, or well as they played and as good as they looked against FIU, like, not spectacular.
Right. And so on the offensive side of the ball, they really do, you know, it's really all on Jamar Smith, who was one of the better quarterbacks in the conference last year, and they will definitely put it on his arm. I think he threw like 460 passes last year and is averaging just over 35 a game this year. They're pretty standard spread passing team. They're in, you know, 10, 11, 3 and 4 wide pretty much all the time. And then they're going to throw the ball a whole lot. They actually ran the ball pretty well against Florida International. But it's definitely going to be, you know, kind of a, it's going to be on Smith, and he's got some pretty good wideouts. I know we said that we were hopefully going to see the end of the bigger dudes at wideout. Unfortunately, their leading receiver, Griffin Hebert, I assume, from Louisiana, probably how that's pronounced. He's 6'3", 217. Adrian Hardy, who's another one of their leading receivers this year, is 6'2", 200. So unfortunately, we are not yet to the days of the receivers you're playing being only 6 foot or so. But, you know, I think this will be a game where Rice is finally going to play an opponent that likes to throw the ball a lot, but doesn't have a power five offensive line protecting the quarterback. So it's definitely going to be a challenge for the Rice defense in terms of, you know, this is not one like Baylor was, for instance, where they're really going to focus on running the ball a lot like this. They're going to put this game on Smith's arm. And so Rice is going to have to stand up and pass defense. And what you hope, I think, going into this one is that as disruptive as the front seven has been in the run game, well, now is the time where they start really having to make hay in the pass rush. Like, they've got to, if Rice wants to put together an impressive effort against Louisiana Tech on defense and be in the area where, you know, they can keep this game to a manageable score, they're going to have to get after Smith. They're going to have to get some sacks, to get some pressures, to force some bad throws and things like that, because that's, you know, if they sit back and let him have all day to throw, he's going to pick him apart.
Yeah, and Louisiana Tech, like, their offensive line, they've given up 8 sacks so far this year, which puts them somewhere roughly around the middle of the pack in Conference USA. So for perspective, Rice has given up 10, so a little bit worse, but right around 2 a game. And we've seen that Rice didn't have any sacks until the fourth quarter of the Texas game. And then the second half against Baylor, they only got that one official sack, but we're in the backfield. And, you know, Baylor didn't really find much success on the ground or through the air in the second half. And, you know, it took a throw at the sticks to lock up the game at the end of that. So I think what we're going to see from Rice is continuing progress on making that pressure. Rice was having to resort a lot of times to bringing a fifth or even a sixth guy to manufacture pressure over the past couple weeks. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, Miles Adams and Anthony Ekpe, and whether or not it's that Javonte Hubbard in the middle or Elijah Garcia, something like whoever rolls in there. Can they get enough push up front to where Rice doesn't need to continually bring that extra rusher? Because if they do, and you have one more guy defending the pass, that puts an added degree of difficulty on Jamar Smith, who, you know, has had his interception problems in the past. So, right. I mean, that's not really any different than the formula that we've been saying, but, you know, at this point, we've kind of seen a progression to where we have some confidence that it might be able to materialize.
Right. And, you know, the thing with this scheme and the way Rice likes to play defense, even if they are getting pressure with four, like, there are going to be some downs and some situations where they're going to bring guys because that's just the way they like to play. That's what this scheme wants to do. And it'll be really important for when they choose to do that, they have to start getting home and they have to start getting there fast. It can't be a situation where you're bringing five or six guys and the quarterback still gets, you know, a full 2 seconds or so to find his hot read and get the ball out. Like, if you're going to bring the pressure, which Rice likes to do, even if things are going well for their down linemen, you've got to get there and it's got to be fast. So that, I think, ultimately is my key matchup for this game, even though as much as Louisiana Tech Wright likes to throw the ball and as much as we've talked about, you know, the performance of Rice's defensive backs is really important. It's going to kind of set their ceiling this year. For me, the number one thing I want to see is that this front seven is the strength of the defense and really the strength of the whole team. And against a team like this, for them to win games, they need that front to be as disruptive against the pass as they are against the run. So that's the number one thing that I'm going to be watching when Louisiana Tech has the ball is, can Rice get pressure? It doesn't have to always be sacks. Sacks are very nice.
I mean, we
won't
be upset if it ends up always being sacks, for the record.
Right. But you got to get there. You got to flush the quarterback. You got to make him uncomfortable. You got to hit him. You got to, you know, make him hear footsteps. You have to affect the quarterback and help your defensive backs out.
And so something that I think a big question coming into the season for Louisiana Tech is we knew, you know, Jamar Smith, middle of the road, good, bad. We knew what kind of quantity he was. We didn't know about their running game because that's just really a part where they struggled last year. And if we're talking about, you know, keeping Rice honest on defense, especially in that front seven, watch Justin Henderson, the Tech running back. He's had a pretty good season. I think right now, let's see, he's tied for the lead in Conference USA with 4 rushing touchdowns, has 277 yards on the ground, averaging 8 yards a carry. He's been really good. And, you know, it hasn't just been racking up yards against bad teams. He's actually been pretty quick and has pulled off a long 75 yarder already this year and has been a guy that they didn't really have last year who could be a threat on his own and really taken that offense to the next level, enabled them to have to rely less on Smith than they had to last year. So Smith's going to continue to carry and be the majority of the offense, but keeping Justin Henderson and bottling down that running game like Rice has been able to do over the past couple weeks, that will force more pressure on Smith, and that will lead to those situations where they can get sacks and hurries and turnovers.
Right. And I think you feel pretty confident about, you know, outside of like the one long run by Wake Forest, that backbreaker after the turnover on downs in the red zone, you know, they've been stellar against teams that I think it's fair to say have a good bit more talent in the running game than Louisiana Tech does. So,
yeah, and I think it's worth noting that after the game, we were talking with Antonio Montero, and he was talking about, you know, compare and contrast, where is this Baylor offense different than the previous teams that you've played? And he called out specifically, he said the Baylor running backs are a lot more athletic and quick and speedy than Rice had played this year. The guys against Wake Forest, Texas Army, you know, not quite the same level of just take the top off speed. And for the most part, Rice was really able to contain them. And Louisiana Tech is not as quick or as fast as Baylor. So that bodes well.
Yeah, no, I think you definitely feel good about coming into this game about when Louisiana Tech chooses to run the ball on standard downs. I think you feel really good about Rice's ability to kind of keep those gains to a minimum and really force them into some longer, you know, passing down third and long, third and medium type situations and not kind of get them in advantageous down and distance. On the other side of the ball, Louisiana Tech has been a little scratchy. I think they have 7 sacks on the year. You can definitely tell they missed Jalen Ferguson, which, I mean, fair. I think he is ended his career the all-time NCAA sacks leader. So fair to say they miss him. They really haven't gotten, like, most of their sacks have come from linebackers, and yeah, pretty much, like, they have two sacks from true defensive linemen, and most of the rest of, and I don't know if they play, I'm not sure what their scheme is like. I think, I don't know if some of those linebackers are more like rush in type guys, but they haven't been as disruptive up front this year, missing him.
And
I don't know. It's been a mixed bag for them on defense, I would say.
Well, and not to take away from Jalen Ferguson, because obviously he was freakishly talented. And I think so, him, O'Shane Ximenes at ODU, and Ed Oliver at Houston, arguably the three best pass rushers on the line, at least, that Rice played last year. And I'm trying to remember, I don't think Ed Oliver registered any sacks. He might have gotten one, but Ximenes and Ferguson didn't have any. So as much as the offensive line had their issues last year against the premier pass rushers, Rice was able to lock down and keep them out of the backfield. So with him gone and Rice bringing in, you know, hopefully healthy offensive linemen who were all Americans at lower levels, like, this should be a matchup where if it was even to maybe a slight disadvantage last year, Rice should be, you know, on the other side of the coin this year. And I feel a lot more confident about what Rice's offensive line is going to be compared to, you know, whatever kind of pass rush that Louisiana Tech has been able to muster. Because for the most part, you know, with the healthy starting five that Rice wants in the game, they've been pretty good at getting the quarterback enough time. Maybe not as much time as you would want, but enough time to make a couple reads and move the offense.
Yeah. And if there's a stat that makes you feel good about this on the whole, so think through Louisiana Tech's schedule as compared to Rice's. They've got Texas in common, and both put up, like, quite similar efforts in terms of the scoring margin against Texas. Rice's other three games were Army, Wake Forest, and Baylor. And Tech's other three games were FIU, Grambling, and Bowling Green. Despite that, and yards per game and total defense, those sorts of things can be misleading statistics, but Rice is giving up 433 total yards a game on defense, and Louisiana Tech is giving up 431. So, despite
playing... Did you say Bowling Green and Grambling?
Bowling Green, Grambling, and FIU is our Louisiana Tech's non-Texas
number
opponent.
One scoring so. Offense.
Yeah, no, not so much. And you know, that stat is not pace adjusted. Certainly, Louisiana Tech's defense has probably faced more snaps than Rice's has. But I think that stat is fairly telling. You know, when you stack up that you've given up a similar number of yards overall, despite a pretty wide gulf in the level of competition faced.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we've kind of talked about the woes of that non-conference schedule, and now that it's done, you know, we knew Rice would be better for it, as hard as it was going to be, but now Rice has had those tests and they have been able to stand up and fight for fourth quarters against these good teams. And I'm not saying that Louisiana Tech is not good, but they are not Texas or Wake Forest or Baylor. So that immediately, just from a, you know, body blow of having had the hits, you know, Rice is in a good standing point entering that game, just with the schedule.
Right. And if you want to feel better, Louisiana Tech is giving up 155 rushing yards a game, which is...
Yeah, 5 yards a carry, yeah. Which Rice has been now under 3 yards a carry every game since the Army game.
So, you know, it's always going to be important for this offense to be able to get positive yards on first and second down. You know, I personally would like to see them maybe throw the ball on first down a little bit more, because I think when they've done that,
I will give them credit. I think that was a big, you know, question mark coming into the Baylor game, and Rice threw on first down at least enough where I was noticing it. It was several times that they started out drives with pass plays, which is a change.
Right, for sure. Like, you can still, you know, this team wants to play ball control and they want to shorten games and they want to do all that stuff. Well, running the ball a lot is a huge portion of that, and they're always going to want to run the ball a lot. But, you know, the best way to control the ball, the best way to stay ahead of the chain, or to keep the possession battle in your favor, to shorten games and stuff like that, the best way to do that is to keep the ball. And that means getting first downs. And sometimes throwing the ball is the best way to do that. So, you know, I noticed that, like you did, that they were throwing a little more on first down than they have in previous games. And I thought that was a pretty encouraging sign. But regardless, they're going, we just know that this is what this team wants to be, is they want to run the ball a lot on early downs. And so it's going to be critical for them to have offensive success. They're going to have to get some positive gains and get some 4, 5, 6 yard runs on first down. So I think that is a thing to watch for Rice on offense. You know, now that, like we said, they're getting to a portion of the schedule where they're not physically overmatched in the trenches. Can they stay ahead of the chains when they choose to run the ball on early downs? So I think that is the thing I will watch early that will, you know, kind of signify to me whether the offense is going to kind of continue to struggle, or whether the issues that they've had so far have been a product of competition.
Yeah, absolutely. And another part that, you know, I think we've hit on kind of the good and the bad of a lot of things that Rice is doing. Here's another thing that I noticed against Baylor. Rice had one penalty for 5 yards. So that brings their penalty total up to the year to a whopping 7 penalties through 4 games for 42 yards. That's less than 2 penalties a game.
Yeah, you know, you can't.
Which is insane. Rice is the only team in the country averaging less than 2 penalties a game, and the only teams in the country that are averaging anywhere in the ballpark are Air Force, Navy, hard-running, physical teams like that that aren't opening themselves up to penalties on offense through taking the ball through the air and playing very sound fundamental defense, which, you know, shouldn't really surprise you. Wake Forest, actually, like 5th in the country in penalties per game with 3. So Rice has been excellent through that part. And if you want to go ahead and beat teams that you're not supposed to beat or be competitive in those games, you can't shoot yourself in the foot. And from a playing a clean game penalty standpoint, Rice has not done that at all. And that was consistent with where they were last year. They're one of the best penalty-free teams in the nation.
Yeah, for sure. And that, you know, 2 penalties a game might not be a sustainable rate just in terms of natural variations. But, you know, I think we said last week, the number one thing I always want to see from a Rice team with the quality and the intelligence of the guys that they bring in is that they always play disciplined and they're always, you know, kind of doing the things that they're supposed to do. And the fact that they have over a year plus sustained this almost unsustainably sounding low penalty rate, I think is a huge sign that the staff is coaching these guys and getting them to play to a standard in terms of discipline. That's exactly what you want to see.
Yeah. And they're pretty adamant that you have to earn your spot on the field. And they really stressed that last year. And even though a lot of freshmen played, those were freshmen who were aware to the point where they weren't having to overthink on the fly. They knew what their job was and they went out and executed. And, you know, we've seen kind of that pattern, taking a little bit of a tangent from the penalty point going on the freshmen. We missed earlier on the offensive side. So there have been 4 freshmen actually that have played in all 4 of Rice's games so far this season. And to put that in perspective, there were only 4 freshmen last year that played every single game that Rice played. So pretty consistent that less overall freshmen getting involved. But Jack Bradley at tight end, he's been one guy that so far has really kind of surprised, and he's come on. He's a very, very good blocker and has made some big plays, opening up some spots in the running game. But he actually had his first career reception. It was an 8-yard gain against Baylor. So saw him and then wanted to DeBraylon Carroll, Adrian Bickham, Treshawn DeVones, 3 other freshmen that have played all 4 games that Rice has had so far. And that is a testament to their understanding and ability to make their plays asked of them and play sound fundamental football. And they're just really talented football players. Adrian and Treshawn on special teams have been where they've been primarily. helping out, but Jack Bradley on offense to Braylon Carroll. I think he had a tackle in the second half, big stop to, I think it was on third down or second down, somewhere before that, the second half, to help Rice get off the field. But another good positive to put in the column before we get into conference play.
For sure, yeah. And it's really nice to be in a place where when you're playing freshmen, especially true freshmen on either side of the ball, that you're playing them not because you have to, but because they're so good that they're earning it despite having upperclassmen ahead of them at positions. And obviously the situations of the two teams are quite different, but take it from a guy whose other team is currently starting like five freshmen on defense because everybody else is hurt.
Wait, hold on. I'm bringing out my world's smallest violin.
We're having to play the ultra talented five stars like a year before we should have to. It's the worst.
I feel so sorry for Alabama. Whatever will they do?
But yeah, it's always nice to play the freshmen because they are the ones forcing you to. So Rice is really, a year after they played so many, it's really, really encouraging to see them already still in the very early stages of this rebuild, to see them in that situation where they're not just forced to play a whole bunch of freshmen because that's all they've got.
Yeah, I mean, and to be fair, a lot of the guys who are holding down those spots, we have some grad transfers on the offensive line, but it's a lot of sophomores and a lot of redshirt freshmen that are still playing the majority of the starting spots. I mean, Miles Adams, the only true senior on the roster, and he's starting. So it's still a lot of underclassmen and a lot of young guys. But those young guys that were able to force their way into the lineup last year have kept their spots because it wasn't just a flash in the pan. Oh, we don't really trust these upperclassmen. It's no, these freshmen are good. And these freshmen are really good to keep, you know, I think arguably that the 19 recruiting class is at least as talented, if not maybe more talented than the 18 class was. And so the sophomores now who were freshmen last year that forced their way into the field are keeping the freshmen now off the field, which is exactly what you want to see if you're the coaching staff, because that means you're able to develop talent at a sustainable pace, which is ultimately how you go, you know, from winning one game to two games to more.
Well, and that's the plan. Yeah, and it's how you build a program that, even when you have a lot of turnover, because, you know, for a lot of G5 teams, just with the access to talent they have and the way the rosters are built, you'll go through situations where the quality of your team is really dependent on how experienced it is. And, you know, you'll have one year where you win a bowl and maybe 9 or 10 games and do really well because you've got a whole bunch of seniors. And then the next year you might be down to 2 wins because you lost everybody and you're playing a bunch of young guys. That certainly happened to Rice more than once during the Bailiff tenure. So building to where you're continually having an influx of talent and you're not, you know, you're playing the young guys when they're good and you're having this nice mix of veterans and young guys is how you build a program that can sustain success and sustain quality even when you're having, even in years where you have a fair amount of turnover.
Yeah, which is, and that's another thing to look at. UAB is probably the hallmark for that situation. They were so senior and upperclassmen late in last year, and they turned that into a Conference USA championship, which was a plus. But this year, I mean, they struggled out of the gate against Alabama State. They struggled to put away Akron. They beat South Alabama pretty handily this past weekend. But, you know, they're a team that it's hard to gauge how good they are because a lot of their guys are freshmen and sophomores and younger players who do not have as much field experience as, you know, Rice's freshmen and sophomores at this point.
All right. Any last thoughts on Louisiana Tech before we wrap up?
You know, I would just say for the Rice fan, try as best as you can to put the last 4 games out of your mind. I don't think that they are a real true representation of what this team is going to be. I think they've learned a lot, and I think they're going to come out against Louisiana Tech and play 4 quarters of competitive football, and we'll see how things go from there. You know, I think Rice has done enough to prove that they have earned respect and they're not going to be taken lightly by their conference opponents. But also, I think at the same time, I think most people in Conference USA media, at least that I've talked to, are nervous about playing Rice. And that's not the feeling that people had last year. So hang in there. Let's see what they do once they get to conference play. And I think we might have a couple more positive podcasts to follow in the coming weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, I think that does it for us this week. So we will see y'all next week, hopefully celebrating a win in the first conference game. But, you know, we'll see how that goes. So we'll see y'all next week and Rice fight.
This show was edited and produced by Carter Spires. It features music from Joseph McDade.